Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Brandon Woodruff. Welcome to the Small Business Podcast, where every week I interview a different small business owner and I ask them the questions that matter, questions that you can take their answers and apply to your business. On today's episode, I had Ben Graham. Ben is both a gym owner and an online fitness coach. I've been connected with him for a while, on the internet, and we've spoken a few times in chat and things like that, but this was the first time we really just sat down and had a conversation, and I really enjoyed it. I think you're going to get a lot from it. So just let me know what you think about this episode. Also, just a quick plug here, I'm an online fitness coach as well, so if you are in a place right now where you're just kind of, whether you already had a routine, but your gym's closed, your groceries are limited, and you're just kind of running into issues now and need some help, or you're trying to use this time to really take charge of your fitness and health for the first time, I am here to help. Just shoot me a text, 251-635-8055, and I'm happy to jump on the phone with you and see how I can help. If you turn into a coaching client of mine, awesome. If not, also awesome, because I'll at least know I gave you some good advice when there's a lot of not good advice out there right now. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Let me know what you think. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Brandon. Welcome to the Small Business Podcast. I have with me today Ben Graham. Ben, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about you and what you do for a living, man, what your business is.
So I'm from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. I own a private strength and conditioning personal training gym, as well as I'm an online coach.
Cool. I like it. Nice, succinct answer there. Awesome, man. So tell us like kind of how you got into that. Like how long have you been doing it? What were you doing before? What was kind of your journey into what you're doing now?
So I actually got right into personal training in my first year of university, gotcha. Which I didn't even complete. Basically, okay. After high school, graduated, said, okay, I've got to go to university now, started in criminology with kinesiology electives.
Oh, man.
And one of my professors asked me, you know, what are you doing in this course? Why are you here? And I said, I want to be a personal trainer. And he said, well, you don't need to be in this class to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And he basically, over the course of that conversation, said, you know what? I would suggest you actually go take your basic certifications to start. And then from that point, get into the industry because it's such a low entrance and see if you like it. And if you like it, we'll always be here. You can always come back and you can pick and choose what you think you need to serve the individuals you're working with.
Wow.
So of course, being, you know, 17, 18 years old at the time, I thought that was awesome because that was the ticket I needed to not be in school. So I went home and told my parents that I was not going to go to school anymore. That didn't go over so well at first. So they said, you have 24 hours to come up with a game plan. And if you don't have a solid game plan, you're either staying in school or you're not going to be living at home.
Wow.
So that's kind of how I got started with personal training. So, you know, that next weekend I went and took just a basic certification to start and started applying and looking for clients and basically had absolutely zero idea what I was doing. It's interesting talking to younger coaches now, not that I'm not young myself, but I often say, I know when I was 18 years old, I thought I knew everything about training. Mm. And I've learned so much since that point. And I feel like I know less than I thought I knew then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that works.
Yeah. And, you know, just from that point, I ended up landing a really good gig helping assist manage a small studio. And a lot of the individuals there were business owners and professionals. And I spent about 4 years at that location. And then went on to open up my own location after that.
Cool. And everything you just said, how long, like, what was that timeline? How long ago was that you first went in and the professor told you that?
So that was, I would have just turned 18 then. Yeah. I think I survived through the first 3 months of my first semester.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, I ended up opening up my own location when I was 23 years old.
Nice. That's awesome.
So that was quite a big bite to take on. I probably wouldn't have done it if I had known how much work was going to go into it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I was naive to how much behind the scenes stuff happened, because it's one of the greatest decisions I've ever made, even amidst the current chaos being closed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit awkward not being able to open your business.
I'm sure.
But yeah, it was, that was at 23. And then now I'm 25, turning 26 in about 4 months, 3 months, something like that.
Cool. Yeah, man, that's awesome. I will say, like, I don't know if you just had a really good professor or if Canadian colleges are just way better than the U.S., because I cannot imagine any of my college professors saying, hey, why don't you just not do this for now and go do something else?
You know, it was so strange because so many people say that to me. They're like, your professor told you, and I wish I remembered his name.
Yeah.
I don't even know who, like, I think I had one conversation with him. It was a class of like 150 people. Yeah. And I just kept raising my hand and asking questions throughout every class. And one day he just caught me at the end of one of, I think it was like a quiz or something. Mm-hmm. And he caught me as I was walking out and he just asked, you know, why are you taking this course? You ask so many questions. You're always in the front row.
Yeah.
And that conversation led to that piece of advice that, as backwards as it sounds, ended up working out incredibly well.
Man. Yeah, seriously, man, that's awesome. I mean, opening your own gym at 23 is pretty pretty impressive and really cool. So, okay, we've got a good timeline here. So, obviously, you spend your days between your gym and the online coaching. So, let's really quickly, let's take the coronavirus pandemic out of the equation. Before all this happened, how did you split your time between those two things? Like, how do you manage both?
So that's very interesting. Most of my distance clients I work with on Sundays, in the sense that I do almost all of the programming from Saturday morning through to Sunday evening. That's when I'm doing all my check-ins on programs, updates, etc., making sure everything is running as it should be. We manage between the physical location and the clients that are not here in Windsor, a combination of about maybe 135-ish people right now, 140 people. The challenge becomes all of our clients are on a hybrid model.
Gotcha.
So not one of our clients that comes to the facility itself doesn't have access to online coaching. Cool. In the sense that all their programming is done for them via Trainerize. So
nice.
Basically, my entire weekend is spent doing the coaching aspect of that, you know, checking in with any hiccups that might occur. Some of the clients, based off the career that they're in, they often are called out of town, and so they don't have access to their normal gyms. So that can be at complete random, making sure that, you know, they have something to do if they're stuck at a hotel or if they only have a little bit of equipment that they manage to pack into their bag with them. So those adjustments happen on Saturdays and Sundays, and then throughout the week, most of it is spent in the building itself, working with in-person clients. I have three coaches on staff here as well.
Cool.
So working with them and ensuring that their clients are all moving along smoothly. So it's definitely time consuming.
Yeah.
Within about 100, 110 hours a week, every week.
Yeah. Man, that's intense. That's awesome, dude. All right. So before we get into some of the practical stuff of like how you actually run your business, just a few kind of things that kind of like kind of a transition from personal to business here. Like, why don't you share with us kind of like, let's say one of the biggest obstacles you've had to overcome, like since you started this, you know, since you started, whether it's your gym or just coaching in general, like what would you say is one of the biggest things you had to overcome and like, how did you go about that?
I would say the biggest thing that I've had to overcome is realizing that, well, two things. One, realizing that I don't have all of the answers and that it's okay to have somebody else in your corner that's way better than you at certain things. You don't have to do it all. Yeah. So, for example, the first year, I did all of my bookkeeping, like every single receipt, and I input every piece of data, and it killed me. It killed me. I didn't lose a penny, but I lost my sanity for a significant portion of that. You know, I was behind on it. I was spending, you know, I would get here at 4 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and I would just enter in numbers off receipts for 12, 16 hours straight. And it was draining and overwhelming, and I'm glad I did it, but now I don't. I have somebody else handle all of that because you don't have to wear all of the hats, right? Yeah. At the beginning, you have to wear a lot of them. But that was tough for me to overcome because I'm a perfectionist by nature. And I realized that, you know, it's okay to step back and people can do a much better job than you at a lot of things. And I don't think it was until I was in a situation where a lot of my weak points were highlighted that I was forced to come to that understanding. Yeah. So that was a pretty humbling experience for me because up to that point, I was like, no, I'll just push through it. I'll do it. But eventually you run out of hours in the day and you've either got to decide that you're going to sacrifice your health and start missing out on things like sleep and you know, time for family and what may be, or you're going to start delegating. Yeah. And you've got to start delegating things that you are never going to excel at. And you know it in your heart. So
yeah.
That was one of the biggest things for me to overcome is checking the ego at the door, basically, and getting past that point. That was hard.
Yeah. And so now you mentioned you have several coaches on staff. I assume you have somebody doing all the accounting and bookkeeping stuff for you now and all that. So.
Oh, yeah. All of that is taken care of. So I have a bookkeeper. I have an accountant. So those are all professional services that are not underneath our roof. Obviously, I hire out for that. And then the two coaches are part-time. One is, you know, in between part-time and full-time.
Yeah.
It's quite the show, but that's kind of the only way to move forward and grow. And in business, there is no holding even, right? I like this ground that I found here. I'm just going to kind of stand here and hang out.
Yeah.
You're either moving forward or you're falling behind. And
yeah.
We're seeing a lot of that right now, you know, being mm-hmm. forced to close the doors to the gym. It's like, okay, well, I'm not going to hold any ground now, yeah. right? I've got to get creative. I've got to pivot fast and mm-hmm. I've got to move in order to not only keep the business open in the future when we're allowed to unlock our doors again, but also to ensure that the coaches can continue to work in a different environment, in a different setting and generate an income. That's important.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think that this is going to be, I don't know how long this is going to last, you know, but I think it's going to be a situation where some, like, businesses are going to have to adapt, like you said. Either they're, in a lot of ways, they're either going to have to adapt or die, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think some will outlast the others based on how much, you know, how much money they've got saved up, how big of a company it is, you know, what plans they had in place, things like that. But you know, I mean, I already, you know, I talk to a lot of different people who own small businesses and I coach people who own small businesses and things like that. And it's just, it's not good out there right now, man. You know, people, it's caught everybody by surprise. And, you know, I think this is going to unfortunately weed some people out, which is not it's kind of a cold way to say it, I think. But, you know, I think it's like even within the fitness profession, I think there are some people who this is going to be it for them. They're going to go get a job somewhere. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah. I've talked to a lot of individuals who own smaller gyms and a lot of them are panicked, right?
Yeah.
Because unless people are willing to work with them in terms of, you know, whoever their bills are coming from and their landlord and, you know, all of that stuff, unless they're able to work with those people, it's very tough if you don't have the systems in play for online coaching already to pivot so fast.
Yeah.
And then to be able to offer that service to your clients, and you can definitely do it. I've seen some phenomenal pivots in the last few days, just being on social media and interacting with people. I'm impressed. I'm very impressed at how fast some people can, you know, tie their shoelaces and get sprinting.
Yeah.
You know, it's impressive.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, they're so overwhelmed that they're just sitting there and they're saying, what do I do?
Yeah.
You got to do something. You got to take some action.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah,
that's going back to lessons. That's another thing I learned is that for the most part, you just need to learn to act imperfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. That is some of my favorite advice right there. Absolutely. Yeah, dude. Well, let's move into some of the practical pieces of how you kind of run your business. So if I ask you, who is your target audience? What would you say? Like who is kind of that like avatar, that person that you're going after to sign with you?
So that's interesting because I actually have a split in my avatar. With the online coaching, I work primarily with young professional men who are looking to lose, you know, 25 to 40 pounds and get their athletic bodies back. So for the most part, people in the 25 to 40-year-old demographic, they're generally high performers, very aggressive, very competitive people in their individual industries. But then in person, similar mindset, but let's bring the demographic up in age. So working with people more in the 40 plus crowd, again, professionals, men and women alike. We actually have more women here at the facility than we have men, but similar goals. They're looking to lose, you know, that 15, 20 pounds and get their general health back more than their increase their levels of athleticism. So okay, a lot of similarities, but also a pretty obvious difference in terms of who we're attracting online versus in person.
Cool. So how do you market? How do you get new clients? Like how do people find out about you in the first place?
So I'm probably one of the worst marketers ever in the sense that I've never had a business card. We don't have a sign on the building. We probably never will. And we don't do a lot of referral chasing. Basically, we get people results.
Yeah.
And the numbers don't lie. The results don't lie. The before and after photos don't lie. And because of that, and people seeing those results on social media, combined with word of mouth from clients who are literally walking billboards for you, that has been what has created the foundation of our entire business.
Yeah.
We're big on showcasing client success stories, as unsexy as they might be. So, you know, a lot of people don't think that a win is a big deal on social media because it's not, you know, a massive PR. Mm-hmm. But if it was a win for the individual you're working with, making sure that you recognize that and showcase that will attract people who have similar goals or who get excited about those same levels of performance, right? So, you know, we've posted videos of a client hitting a PR on the bench press because they just transitioned to a 45-pound bar from an aluminum training bar. Yeah. Like that is not sexy in the social media world.
Right, but it's awesome.
But a lot of people say, wow, those coaches appreciate victories for their clients regardless of how impressive they might look.
Yeah.
I want to work with them. So that's been our entire marketing strategy, is just making sure we're prioritizing results and then showcasing that. That's actually something I learned from John Goodman with the Online Trainer Academy. He said, you have to be good at what you do. And that's only half the battle though, because you have to make sure that everybody knows about it.
Right.
And so once we dialed in the results aspect, it was like, let's tell everybody.
Yeah. So your marketing strategy is get awesome results and then just kind of blast that out. And that's pretty much it.
That's it. That's all cool. We do. That's awesome. Literally is our entire marketing strategy. We don't even have a marketing budget.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I call it an experience budget. Let's invest more into the clients themselves, right? So we don't spend money on business cards and signs and all of those type of things. We did actually just get business cards for the first time since we opened almost 3 years ago. Cool. I figured it was about time.
Yeah.
So, but what we do is we take that same money that a business might spend on marketing and we put it into new equipment for the clients. We put it into things that are going to improve their experience, maybe gifts, practical things that they're going to use. And that way they're either more likely to get results because they have access to more tools, or the experience and the process of them getting those results is more fun for them, so they talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's been our primary aim, and it seemed to work so far.
Yeah. It sounds like it is, man. I mean, that's awesome. Let me, before we move on, just out of sheer curiosity on my part, why no sign on the building?
You know, I don't even have a good answer for that. So it's a part of the lease agreement too. I'm pretty sure I have access to one of the most visible signs in the entire city.
Oh, wow.
And everybody harps on me because we train so many individuals here who own or operate small, medium, large businesses. Mm-hmm. And they're like, when are you going to put a sign up?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just haven't seen the point of getting around to that yet. But I really, at this point, we have so many clients. We have such a great foundation of incredible people that the trickle effect of their friends and their peers and their family members coming to us, we should probably have something to identify what unit to go into. That might be useful. But I don't have a good answer for that.
That's like, funny, man.
Just, we didn't do it at the beginning, and I was so swamped trying to figure out how not to, you know, completely tank the place that by the time I felt like, okay, I've kind of got some of this together. I'm not going to totally run this beast into the ground. Mm-hmm. I just never got around to it.
Yeah.
It gets brought up at least every 4 or 5 weeks. So somebody says, so are you going to put a sign up?
Yeah. But that's so funny, man. I mean, I totally, totally understand the mindset of like, it just hasn't taken priority yet. I just, it sounds interesting to me, like almost like it has like this like underground, like exclusive club feel, you know, nobody knows.
Yeah, we always joke that those who know, know.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You got like, if somebody's coming in, they've got to ask whoever referred them, like, where exactly am I going?
That you should like change the password every day or something like that to get in.
Yep.
That's awesome, man. So the next thing I normally ask about is content, like what kind of content you're creating. You've really already answered that question. You said, you know, the majority of your content is, you know, just showcasing the results of your clients. So anything and outside
teaching.
Of that?
Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Always teaching, always trying to see what can we post that's going to add value to people that are similar to our clients, right? Yeah. So when clients ask questions, we literally mark them down. Like, we have lists of content ideas that will probably last us years. Mm-hmm. And just throw it on the list. And when you have a few free minutes, get the phone out, film it, and answer that. Because likely, if your clients are asking, someone somewhere has the same question.
Yeah.
You can benefit from it.
Yep, absolutely, man. That's my entire content strategy, is answer questions that people really ask me in real life, just in various mediums, writing, videos, Q&As. So where do you think right now are the best places and where you're seeing the most success in posting? And, you know, I'm kind of leading the question a little bit just because I know one of the places you are, but I'm just curious. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I'm on most social media platforms. Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, I'm on YouTube. Basically, anywhere I can find more than one view is where I exist. Cool. Because you never know where the consumer is going to be. I mean, you do to a degree because you have your social networks build up over time, but you never know who's watching and where they're going to be when you post.
Right.
And you can't win them all. You can't catch every eye. That's impossible. Yeah. But I think that as much as somebody might say, oh, that app is not the best one, I don't think anyone can really say what's best or what's worse. Mm-hmm. If something gets some traction and gets more than one views, that's better than zero views. And that might be the person who reaches out and inquires about online coaching. And you wouldn't have otherwise reached them because they're halfway across the world and they have no reason to be your friend on Facebook.
Yep.
Right? So.
Yep. Yeah, I think you kind of run into two pieces of marketing advice that are just completely contrary to one another, you know, in that field. I agree with what you said. Like, the way I approach it is also put out content in as many places as I possibly can. But I've seen a lot of advice that says, just focus on 1 to 2 places, you know, try to grow your audience there. But in my mind, it's kind of like, well, if I'm already creating this video or writing this thing, like, it takes me seconds to post it somewhere else too. So why not do it? You know what I mean? So
exactly. Yeah. And as both of us are on TikTok right now, that's actually a fun one.
Yeah.
Because so many people think it's such an immature application because, like you said at the beginning when we were chatting, so much of it is dancing and singing. And I mean, your dance moves and singing moves are probably better than mine. Mine are horrific.
No, not, I guarantee you.
We're going to have a duet dance off. That's what we'll have to do.
And maybe if I wear my Darth Vader mask, I'll do it. Maybe,
hey, there you go. So, but the thing that's interesting is how much attention those posts actually get. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is we're seeing that maturing of the application, where that is the best cup ever, by the way. I know no one else is going to see that, but I saw that.
I thought about commenting on it, man. This is what happens when you have daughters. You just grab frozen cups.
Hey, I like it. I respect it, man. That's good. But with the app, we're seeing it mature to the point where individuals can reach out on there that might actually be interested in your services. And so many people turned a blind eye to it at the beginning and said, oh, that's silly.
Yeah.
Like, okay, but if a video is getting 100,000 views, the chances of someone actually wanting your services out of that 100,000, you'd probably find one. So yeah. I've already gotten a few people DMing me through that app, which I'm surprised by because it's been a while. I figured it might just be a waste of time and only good for my own ego seeking attention. But now it's like people are reaching out and saying, hey, thanks for the content, or hey, that's an informative post. Can you answer this for me? Can you give me more advice?
Yep.
And that's where you're starting to create that warm lead pool almost from an application that was very much underrated at one point.
Yep. I think it still is to a degree. I mean, I think it's losing a little bit of that organic reach now that a lot of like celebrities and stuff are on there, but I don't think that I don't think it's gone. I mean, I literally posted a video last week and it got like 85K views, and same thing as you. I mean, people will reach out, they'll ask questions, you know what I mean? Like when they see that somebody is going to stick around, you know, because I don't know if you've noticed this, but on that app, you'll see a ton of people who will, they'll go on and they'll post a couple of videos and then they never post again. I've seen similar things in podcasts. You know what I mean? Like people will start something, they'll, it's almost like they're giving it a try, but they don't stick with it long enough to like get any kind of real traction on the app. So, you know, they're gone. I think what we're seeing is like, we just be consistent and put stuff out, you know, and people will notice that and they will reach out to you. So cool, man. That's awesome.
Well, the other thing too, is we can put links in our bios, right?
Yeah.
So you can push people in a certain direction if you so desire, right? If you have an application form for one of the services you may offer, if you just have a channel that you want them to see, like on Instagram or YouTube, you can push them in that direction, which is great because if you use one of those platforms as your dominant landing page, whether it's a website, whether it's a social media platform where you have a bigger following, you can leverage that extremely high organic reach that it's giving users right now. Like even now, when, as you mentioned, there's more celebrities, the posts are not getting as much traction. Even your worst videos are getting, you know, 50, 100 views.
Yep.
Your medium ones are getting 500 or 1,000.
Yeah. Same video on Instagram will get 3 views.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So if you can take some of that, just a small percentage, and push them through to another platform where you may have a bigger foundation, that's only going to help you.
Yeah.
So I found that to be useful. I've gotten quite a few followers on other platforms from TikTok, as silly as it sounds. And now I'm starting to actually see the DM conversations working. I don't think they were before because I just figured out that I didn't allow people to DM me. I had it set to private. I just realized that like 2 weeks ago. So that actually could be the reason why nobody's DM'd me yet.
They've tried. Just hasn't happened. Yeah.
I was sabotaging myself.
That's hilarious, dude. So let's transition a bit from kind of like the marketing and content to the like actually closing the deal piece. So like, how do you take somebody from, let's say somebody reaches out to you, you can answer it as a two-parter, like with the online or local. But let's just say somebody has seen another person's results, that you guys have gotten them. They reach out to you and you have somebody kind of like, you know, you've already got them right in front of the hook now, and you're just trying to kind of like close the deal. What does that look like? Is it a phone call? Like, what does it look like to actually sign them as a client for you?
So, you know, that's a very interesting one. When it comes to online clients, it's always on the phone. I shouldn't say always, speaking in absolutes probably isn't the best thing. It's tough because some people nowadays only want to text, they only want to email. And I find one of the only ways to communicate effectively is through conversation. It's very tough to get your emotion across otherwise. Like we can't type in a font that tells people this is how we're expressing this particular emotion. Yeah.
Right.
And so whenever possible with the online clients, I do try and get a phone conversation, and 99% of the time that does happen. That's always ideal. And closing a sale, it has to be done. I don't find it all that challenging. I don't have any special tricks per se, only because most of the people reaching out are already warm leads.
Yeah.
They've already seen the results we're getting people. They've already seen the outcomes that we can push with clients. And so they're interested already. What it comes down to is ensuring that we have a service that is relative to what they're looking for in terms of pricing package. So making sure we have a couple of options, 3 options is usually where we stick around depending on what sort of service it is. Just to make sure that we can actually work with that individual based off of what their price range might be. But at the end of the day, I really suck at sales. Like, I've always found it to be awkward. But I also know that it's an important part of business, right? Like, it's very important. And I know in the personal training industry especially, people tend to, like, cringe at the thought of, like, I got to sell somebody, right? A lot of us are helpers. We like to help. We like to give. But the reality is that we have to generate revenue as well. We have to have an income. Otherwise, our stress levels will get so high that we can't service anyone well, or we can go out of business completely. So what I found much easier to do was just really showcase everything we did with people. And I found that built enough rapport going into the conversation. And it was just a matter of figuring out exactly what that individual needed, ensuring that we could service them properly. Because if you can't, you have to be willing to take a step back and say, hey, this is not going to be a good fit. I don't think I can help you with that. Yeah. Or I don't have the answers you're looking for, or I don't offer the services that you're interested in. Making sure that you can maybe send them to somebody else in your professional network that would be better able to service them. And from that point, it makes the entire process so much easier to close a deal.
Yep. Yep. So you would say that you pretty much have closed the deal before you get on the phone with people, because they have, I mean, of course you still have to finalize it, but they've already bought into you. It's not like it's a cold call. These are warm leads. They've already seen something because of the way you do your marketing. So
yeah, that's always my intent, is to build enough rapport by showcasing client success stories that people are coming either because they've been referred or because they're interested in something that they've seen us accomplish with clients. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy cold calls. I actually have a blast with them. I'll get on LinkedIn and just fire off DMs to people I've never even talked to in my life. You know, I think that is the fun part about it. And it's a skill set that, you know, forces you to get outside of your comfort zone and really see how you can communicate with others. And it's not necessarily the most optimal to dive deep and start cold calling people. But I messaged somebody on LinkedIn today and literally just asked them if there was anything I could offer them in terms of content or information relative to training, because I noticed that they had made a post on LinkedIn about working out. And that's created a whole conversation. Now, what that will lead to, who knows?
Yeah, man. I love that. I think that I'll be honest. Like I've only recently, like, I've had a LinkedIn for a long time. I was in recruiting before I went for, like, until I left and went full-time, self-employed, like, last year. But, like, because of that, I built up my LinkedIn pretty well, and then I just was able to pivot it into, like, the fitness stuff. But when you're on, and anybody who hears this who's on LinkedIn, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. You get, I pretty much don't respond when somebody connects with me, and then instantly the first thing I get is just this wall of text in my DMs, like, about their service. And they're just like, I'm like, I don't know, who are you, first of all? Like, what is this? But the kind of message that you just said that you send, if somebody literally, like, it's a personalized message that I know is not just a little quick copy and paste, and they're like, hey, you know, noticed your post. Like, is there anything I can help with? I will always respond to those kind of messages. You know what I mean? I am not a fan of the cold, sell before you've built any trust or rapport at all. And I see the kind of message you just sent as a first step in building that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's about going that extra mile, because people will see that reflected in everything you do. So if you go on someone's LinkedIn profile and you see that they just posted a random piece of content, likely because they're a business professional that watches Gary Vee and thought it'd be cool to showcase something in their personal life, right? Yeah. And they then take that post and you see, oh, wow, there's a barbell in the background there. You drop a comment and say, ooh, barbells are like gold right now. People would kill for those, because they would. Nobody has access to gyms unless they have home setups, right? So you take that information and you put that into a conversation. Like you said, it's personalized, and it shows that you actually gone a step further with interest. That's going to catch a lot of people's attention, because it's not just a traditional comment. Hey, are you interested in purchasing Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Right? Hey, peep my bio, 3 spots left. Like, you know, do you want to rep my clothing line? Like, that stuff is so annoying that people ignore. So if you can take it a step further and actually show interest in what they're doing, And realizing too that not everything you do has to be transactional. I think that's what overwhelms a lot of people, especially with online sales, is they think every conversation they engage in, they have to sell right then and there.
Right.
And they don't.
Yeah.
You can literally just reach out and say, hey, looks like your vacation is a blast. Whereabouts are you? Mm-hmm. And that person might respond back and tell you. And you might say, wow, I've been there before. That's awesome. And conversation done.
Yeah.
That same individual might come back to you 6 months from now and show interest in your services simply because you built a little bit of rapport and created a connection.
Yeah.
And in a sense, what we do, business is a contact sport, right? It's how many contacts can you make? How many people know you do what you do?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Love it, man. I love the relational approach. So just really quickly, we'll touch on client retention. I'm from our conversation so far, I think I know how you're going to answer this question, but like what makes people kind of stick around as clients of yours?
So likely the first one is going to be the results, right? Mm-hmm. We really like numbers. I'm a numbers guy. So not only do we have a 3D scanner on site, which is kind of
that's
cool.
Awesome.
So we do full three-dimensional body metrics on people. So we put them on the scanner, we catch all of those metrics at once. And that way things are measurable, because if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's really important. And then we use Trainerize as well to ensure that we're documenting all the progressions that our clients make. One of the biggest pride points I have as a coach is actually a 77-year-old client we have, who she came to us wanting to get a little bit stronger. She didn't really have any specific goals. And she saw somebody bench pressing the one time and said, I'd like to try that.
Awesome.
Great, let's rock and roll. Fast forward, and it's important to clarify, she's 4'11", and I'd be hard pressed if she was 105 pounds, and she can almost bench press 85 pounds now, which is insane when you consider how petite she is. Mm. And of course her demographic as well. This is someone who never lifted weights.
Right.
She exercised, she went to workout classes and stuff, but never in her life lifted weights. And we've been able to only achieve that through measuring every minor progression that we take and ensuring that all of the percentages are in play. Well, we can then take that and show clients that, hey, you might not feel like you've made all that much progress, but when we pull a 6-month snapshot of your squat or your deadlift, or the fact that you couldn't squat or deadlift because you're in too much pain and now you can, you can say what you want, but the numbers are here.
Yeah.
And measuring that and showing that to clients creates so much more retention, because at the end of the day, improvement is very slow. It's little tiny budgets forward, inch by inch by inch. And for a lot of people, it becomes frustrating because they look in the mirror every day and they're like, well, I'm not really seeing any change. So the more things we can show them that they're improving on, the more that the pursuit of improvement becomes intoxicating.
Yeah.
So we have the 3D scanner, so we have all those body metrics. We make sure we do photos right along the way. We're measuring every single exercise that they do at all times, by rep, by weight, by volume, and ensuring that they're aware of that along the way, that not only do we track that, but we have access to it at all times. So, you know, if someone is feeling like, hey, you know what, I've been working hard for 3 months, I haven't made any progress, we can say, actually, newsflash, you've made massive progress, and here it is. So that's a big part of retention for us, is just really ensuring that their results are our number one priority at all times. Because I find, especially in the fitness industry, a lot of people, they forget about the numbers, right? Yep. It's about how you feel. It's about how you this. And no, at the end of the day, people come for results, right? They might like you as an individual. They might have a great relationship with you. But at the end of the day, there is a transaction taking place.
Right.
And so as much as someone might like you, if you haven't moved them forward with their weight loss goal or with their strength goal, that is the primary concern. That is what they're investing their hard-earned money into. Mm-hmm. We always have to make sure, as good as our relationships are, a lot of our clients, we consider them family. All of them we consider family. We do have to make sure that number one is making sure they're moving forward, or ensuring that they know we're there for them to move forward. If they're in a phase of their life where maybe moving forward isn't what they're ready for right now.
Yeah.
Maybe just showing up is what they're ready for.
Yep.
And then the other thing would be making sure that we're going above and beyond. So this might be the worst piece of advice ever. I'm not entirely sure yet, but every one of our clients has access to my personal phone number. So if they have an issue, they can reach out, they can call, they can text, et cetera. That doesn't mean they're going to get a response in 33 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an 8 p.m. bedtime. So if they call me at 11 p.m. to tell me that, you know, they found the workout was a little bit too hard, they're going to have to wait till tomorrow.
Right.
But I do ensure that they all have that point of contact. A lot of people would advise against that. Mm. But I found it to really help build community and trust in our brand and what we do for people in terms of service, right? They know that we're one point of contact away. Now, that might be a really bad decision if we get to 200 or 300 clients. Might have to change that entire approach. Yeah. But
yeah. Yeah, I do the exact same thing, man. And it's very like, I've questioned myself on it before. Like that's the only problem I have with it is scalability. You know what I mean? How high can I scale this? When my client, when my clients get to a certain number, this is not going to be feasible for me anymore. So either I'm going to have to hire another coach to be a partner to me to split it, or I'm going to have to change the policy, you know, so change the way I do it. But if it's working, you know, I think that it doesn't have to be that black or white. Like you said earlier, like absolutes sometimes are the enemy. I think that it can be, hey, while we're growing, you know, and while we're trying to establish ourselves, or even, I mean, you're 3 years in at this point, you know, like while you can, why not do it? And then, you know, adjust only when you have to. That's kind of the way I look at it. You know, again, like you said, maybe that's not the best advice, but that's how I'm going about it as well.
I 100% agree with that. 100%. And part of it is being in the trenches and figuring it out as you go, because what might work for one business owner, one industry, one individual might not work for everybody else, right? Like I have totally different circumstances than you may have, than the next person may have. And because of that, you know, the approach that's a home run for you might not work at all for me.
Right.
Or 20% of it might change your entire business model and bring you to that next level. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's about troubleshooting and doing things really, really wrong and being willing to make mistakes and then not letting those mistakes crush you.
Yep. Absolutely. So what do you personally do like for self-improvement, like to be a better coach, to be a better gym owner? Like what does self-improvement look like for you?
I'm an avid reader. I love to read. I probably spend way too much money on books. I've constantly got at least two books on the go. I try to run a rotation in the sense that I start out with a strength fitness oriented book. Then I move on to nutrition. Then I move on to business or sales, etc. Yeah. And I come back around on a regular basis. If I were to only read what I wanted to read, it would likely be just strength training stuff. Yeah. But my weak points are not there as much as they're in other arenas. And so I force myself to go through that rotation so that I'm constantly touching on the areas that I know I need to work on, but I'm not so much interested in doing anything other than procrastinate on learning more about them. So I look to people who are admirable in the sense that they've achieved things that I aspire to one day achieve, or I'm in awe at what they've achieved and might not necessarily want to do that, but there's certainly lessons to be learned. Mm. And I look to what they recommend. Yeah. You know, you read a book and then the individual writing it, they suggest three or four books along the way. I mark those down. And when I'm looking for a book in that particular category, I go right back to that reference list and say, what's the next one? And I take notes throughout the entire period of reading. Mm. So from the start of the book to the end, I'll often end up with a stack of notes. Then I'll type those notes and then I'll reread those typed notes and file them so that I have reference material at all times, as well as so I actually absorb what I'm reading.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Love that. Related question, and this is the first time I've asked this one on the podcast, but what I heard somebody ask it on a different podcast I listened to, and I love the question. What is like your morning routine look like? Like when you first get up, like what is your first like hour of the day look like?
So my morning routine is, I guess, I shouldn't say unique, but it's not very common. Mm-hmm. I usually get up around 3:45 in the morning.
Yeah, that's not common at all.
No, that's not common. Yeah. But the key is people always are impressed by the time I wake up, but nobody wants to ask me what time I go to bed.
Yeah.
And that's probably the better question is I've got like an 8 p.m. curfew. It's like I got to be out. But no, so I get up at about 3:45, maybe 4 o'clock, depending on whether or not I hit the snooze. I'm guilty. I hit it at least twice a week, sometimes more, depending on how late I did end up getting to bed. But regardless, get up. First thing I do is I jump in the shower. Jump in the shower. I do time my showers. I know that's pretty weird.
I got the stopwatch. I'm with you.
Yep, and it's 5 minutes. I know what I got to do. Get out of the shower. Immediately, I drink a half liter of water. Then I run downstairs, drink a cold coffee, always black, and then I jump right in the truck and I'm off to the gym. So I'm usually at the gym by 4:20, 4:30 in the morning.
Cool.
There's never traffic at that hour. So if anyone listening doesn't like traffic, just change your schedule. There's no traffic at that hour.
Or just drive during a quarantine situation.
Yeah, and hope you have a letter depending on where you live, because some places right now you need a letter, so gotta be careful. And then I get to the gym, open up around 4:30. The doors officially open at 5. There have been scenarios where I have somehow slept through my alarm long enough that I didn't get there till 4:45, so I was like, we got to put a 5 o'clock there, because we do have some pretty hardcore clients that they're right there at 4:45. They're ready for the 5 o'clock door unlock. So that's actually pulled in a couple clients who otherwise wouldn't have trained with us, because we're the only place that opens that early other than the 24-hour places, and they really like that. And then my morning started. Sessions start at 6:30, depending on the day. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I don't start my sessions until 7 or 8 a.m. because those are my training days. So I will work out around 4:45, 5 a.m. as soon as I get to the gym, get that workout out of the way, and then I own the day. No matter what distractions come in, they're likely not coming in before 6 a.m. So my workout's not going to get ruined as a byproduct.
That's awesome, man. That's a cool.
That's every day. I do that Saturday. I do that Sunday as well, because if I screw it up one day of the week, it makes it way harder on Monday morning.
Yeah.
So I'm at the gym 4:30 on Sunday as well, just to keep that habit consistent.
Gotcha. So you mentioned, you know, like how do you kind of like plan for the future with your business? So like, do you guys write out like years in advance? Are you kind of like, we just have a plan for this year, the next few months? What does planning look like for you, you know, with your gym and your online coaching?
I've never even made a business plan. I don't even know how. So basically we plan for events like this in the sense that we're always trying to stay ahead of the curve, learning, pulling in new technology, new software that can streamline and make more efficient the services that we offer. In terms of a situation like this, which is like a black swan event, nobody knows when it's going to happen, why it's going to happen, what it's going to be. But the one thing I'm extremely fortunate for is having worked with so many individuals who have been through recessions. Our oldest client right now is 81 years old. So from the youngest to the oldest, there's a lot of experience in the building, and being able to listen to the horror stories and the trials and tribulations that other individuals have been through relative to owning and operating businesses, and really seeing the highs and lows of economic upswings and downturns, and realizing that you have to prepare for that stuff, because when shit hits the fan, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on the podcast. I apologize. I just did. I'm a rule breaker.
I want people to be themselves on this.
You have to be able to handle that pressure temporarily, right? So as scary as this is, we have enough cushion that we can take the time we need to pivot and build out our online systems more efficiently and then grow from that point without feeling that we're in such a panic that that overwhelming stress crushes our creativity. Yeah. So it's not a fun time. It's not an exciting experience, but it's definitely not something where we're feeling so much pressure, as so many are, that we're just going to shut down tomorrow morning. But we don't plan in the sense that we know exactly how our business is going to run in 3 months. We kind of navigate based off of what is working very well. So we'll experiment with 3 or 4 different things. We might come out with a low-cost service and realize it takes off, even though that's not something we would normally offer. Yeah. Dude, let's run with it. If the market likes it, the market is the determinant of what we do.
Yep.
We're coming out with high-ticket offers as well. those are getting a lot of traction. Good. Let's put more effort into that. And just constantly thinking of how we can add more value to the marketplace and service more people.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's trial and error. I don't have a 5-year plan.
Yeah.
I know where I want to be in 5 years in the sense that I want the business to be growing and servicing more people. But it could be completely different than what I'm thinking it should be. In fact, where I thought we would be next week is way different now because of the past 2 weeks, the circumstances that have hit us.
Yeah.
But from an entrepreneurial perspective, that's where the creativity comes in and see opportunity in a new environment, right? So you can sit and panic for 2 weeks, or you can stop, kind of reassess the situation, catch your breath, because it's overwhelming, right? Like it hits you. It's a blindside.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, where do people need us right now? And how does the skill set we currently have add value to them where they're at right now?
Yeah.
What can we do to help more people given the changing environment, the changing setting that we're in? And then quite possibly, what skills do we need to hone in that maybe we're not that good at, but we have the foundation for?
Yeah.
And then take off running in that direction until, I mean, worst case scenario, we're all screwed if the internet shuts off. So that's basically, if that happens, then I don't know where we're going to pivot, right? We can't open our doors. We can't use the internet. That's like the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
I'm going to start a farm at that point.
Yeah. Start a little stand selling guns and canned goods.
That's the truth.
Yeah, man. Well, that's cool. I mean, so, it sounds like I like your planning method, you know, just because I think that the 5-year plan thing and the business plan, I think that if, you know, I think this is just my theory, but I think that the whole business plan, being written out and having a 5-year plan and things like that are kind of like more geared toward somebody who's going to seek like investors in a company, things like that, because they want to see that laid out. You know what I mean? They want to see that they actually have put forethought into this.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. Like I've tried my hand at writing a little business plan before, and it's just always kind of, it just feels so arbitrary and like a waste of time. Yeah. It kind of feels like, I mean, I can write this, but like you said, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the next day, let alone next 5 years. You know what I mean? We could be in a totally different, like complete society in that time.
And that's the thing too, is like, so my background, I was a competitive kickboxer. So one of my favorite quotes is everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And the reality is that in the last 2 weeks, basically everybody just got punched in the mouth really hard. And so the majority of plans that were in place most of them just got thrown out. They're like, well, that's not going to work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if your goal was to expand the square footage of your restaurant, well, that's a pretty bad plan.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you were just opening your first personal training studio, like right about now, that's not the greatest plan.
Right.
So, you know, we all just got punched in the mouth, and now it's time to come up with a new plan.
Yeah.
So long-term plans, I think they should be loose at best. And, very malleable. That's important.
Yeah. So this is a little bit more in the weeds question. So it's, but how do you accept payment methods from your clients? Like, what do you use? What software systems do you use?
So I primarily use Square processing for in-person clients. I'm actually experimenting with the Trainerized Pay right now.
I didn't know they had that.
Yeah, they have that now. And I've transacted a couple times through it. And it seems to be a pretty slick system. I haven't used it enough to know for sure. Mm. But what I like about it is that you could offer, say, a service, an automated service on it, and the individual, you can give them a link to that service. They can purchase it directly through the app, and it automatically will bring them live onto that that service that you're offering. So if you had, you know, I don't know, like a 2-week bodyweight workout and it was $50, you could build that program out and the price is right there. The person buys and transacts all through one seamless platform. Yeah. So that type of stuff is very cool, but primarily Square is how we invoice.
Cool. That's awesome. And just a side note here, for anybody who's not in the fitness industry, Trainerize is like a fitness coaching software. So I know we've mentioned it several times, so I always like to kind of like give a little definition of things that people are like,
how do I use that for my plumbing business?
Yeah, it's not going to work out so well. I mean, maybe if you're really ingenuitive, you'll find a way to pull it off, but probably not. Yeah, man. So just kind of starting to wrap up here, just a few quick questions. So let's say you meet somebody, it doesn't have to be a fitness related thing, just like somebody who's planning to start their own business, a friend of yours, a family member, somebody you meet, you know, and they, you're having a conversation with them and you can only give them like one piece of advice. What would that piece of advice to like a new small business owner be?
Oh boy.
One hard piece. To narrow it down.
You picked the most verbose person ever.
For that's one fine.
Piece of advice.
As long as it's one thing, you can say as much as you want about it.
That's a good one. I'm just going to clarify, this is going to be in my fave five. So it might not be my number one, but it's the number one I can think of right now.
All
right. I would say be prepared to make a lot of mistakes and don't beat yourself up over it. The number of mistakes I have made along the way is ridiculous. I don't do almost anything right for sure the first time. But one of the quotes that comes to mind on this is only a fool burns himself on the same fire twice, right? Yeah. So be patient with yourself and understand that if you've never done anything before, you're probably going to screw it up pretty good the first time around. And as much as you might think you're prepared, likely you're not as prepared as you think you are. And those mistakes are going to hurt your ego. Sometimes they're going to cost you money. Sometimes they're going to cost you relationships. And sometimes they're just going to drive you absolutely insane because of the amount of time it's going to take to correct something that, if done right the first time, would have been effortless. But what you're going to do is you're going to learn throughout that, right? It's yeah. trial by fire. You're going to throw yourself into an environment in which you're going to develop a skill set that makes you resilient in the real world, that allows you to handle situations like this. First off, you'll realize that mistakes are part of the process and that as long as you're failing forward, you're going to get somewhere eventually, as well as the fact that whatever you fail at, assuming you take the opportunity to learn from that entire experience, you're likely not going to do that again, or at the very least, it'll be more efficient the second time around. So if people can realize that there's a lot of mistakes involved in the process of starting a business, or if you're just in the initial stages of it, and they get past the fact that it's just going to be a lot of bruising their ego and scraping their elbow along the way,
yeah,
then they'll be good.
Cool. I love that, man. So one other question before we just do the where can we find you and wrap up. If money like were not a factor, you know, like let's just say you had unlimited money, would you be doing what you're doing now? And if not, what would you be doing instead?
Oh, I 100% would be doing this. This is like my massive playpen.
Yeah.
Right. This is like, so I've got a garage gym at home, which was actually, all of my friends called it the playpen. Because basically it's a two-car garage. It's never had a car in it. It was built to be a gym.
Yeah.
And that's what I invested all of my money into building, was this home gym, because I like to experiment, right? If I'm in the office reading something and I come across a new exercise, or I want to try and create an exercise, I could just go do it. Mm-hmm. So all that's really happened here is I've created a bigger playpen, a bigger lab.
Yeah.
And this is where I want to be all the time. There's a reason I come here at 4 o'clock on Sunday morning, when a lot of people are sleeping in, because I have time to crack the books open. I get to experiment with things, and I do that all the time. It's not uncommon for me to come down from the office randomly and spend 10 minutes tying a band off against a squat rack to see what happens.
Yeah.
You attach a different piece of equipment to it. So 100%, I would definitely be doing this without a doubt. And the nice thing is I get to offer a service to people that aligns 100% with what I love doing. The only downfall is sometimes people get really overwhelmed because I'm easily excitable about the topic.
Yeah.
And so they might get an earful from time to time.
Yeah.
And they'll sit down and ask a simple question, and an hour later they got way more than they bargained for.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But
that's awesome, man. I hate passion. I mean, that the fact that you found something you're passionate about to answer that question that way is awesome. So I'm happy for you.
In fact, Brandon, you couldn't pay me enough money to quit doing this.
Yeah.
I would rather do this every day and make a bare minimum, as long as I could survive, of course. Mm-hmm. I'd rather do that than somebody say, listen, I'm going to buy your will to win. I'm going to pay you $100 million for it.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Not for sale.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So if people hear this and want to find you, you know, what are the best places online that they can go find you? Definitely tell them not going to send them for your building, but
yeah, don't come to the gym. The door's locked. You're not allowed to work out there for the foreseeable future.
You can't find them anyway.
Yeah. So, basically, best plan is Bangram Fitness Solutions. I do have a website. It's thefacility.ca. And yeah, I'll make sure to send you the links to all of my random handles because I'm all over the map, man. Yeah. You can find me anywhere. TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn, yeah. Facebook. I'm there. So.
And you the facility dot what? What was the ending there?
.ca.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Where all of our contact website blogs, that's where all that exists.
Gotcha. So. All right, man. Well, Ben, I appreciate you taking the time to come on, man. This was awesome.
This was a blast.
Hey, Brandon again. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, got anything from it, please tune back in and please share it with any other small business owners in your life.